Hello, and welcome to Sun Sounds of Arizona. I'm David Rogowski, and today I'll be reading from Outside Magazine. Okay, we're going to continue with Outside's top 23 places to visit in 2024. First up is Colorado. Why now? The Centennial State continues to woo travelers with improved adventure options. The first thing that caught our eye was the San Juan Mountain Guide's Million Dollar Trek, which debuted last year as a five-day hut-to-hut hike from July through September. You can head out from Ouray and overnight at three full-service backcountry lodges. It's never been easier to plan an EV-powered road trip through Colorado's most beautiful places. In 2024, you'll find charging spots on 14 of the state's 26 scenic and historic byways, with more on the way. On June 1st and 2nd, don't miss the new Outside Festival, brought to you by Outside Inc., this magazine's parent company, in Denver Civic Center Park. It will feature headline musical acts, films and ideas summit, climbing walls, and gear demos. Venture Intel. Populous, the country's first carbon-positive hotel, is on track to open in downtown Denver this summer with a distinctive design. Its white exterior and windows are meant to look like notches in an aspen tree. The southern Colorado town of Trinidad is quietly becoming a hot spot for gravel cyclists. It hosts September's Rad Dirt Fest with three courses through the Spanish Peaks. Hikers head into Fisher's Peak State Park for its new 16-mile round-trip trail to the eponymous 9,633-foot summit. Note the top of the trail is closed from March until August for raptor nesting, so bring your binoculars if you're a birder. From Trinidad, it's about 2 hours to Great Sand Dunes National Park, where the startup, Ramble, recently installed 25 spacious campsites with kitchens and shared showers and a stargazing area with a hammock. Rent a sandboard while you're at it. Ramble is also open to campground near Mesa Verde National Park later this year. Other new stays around the state include the Campfire Ranch, Wash Gulch, and Crested Butte. It requires a 4-mile approach in winter, but the payoff is incredible ski touring and summer hiking. Campfire Ranch also operates a campground open from May through October on the Taylor River and nearby Almont. There are sleeping bags, coolers, and tents for rent. Staff will teach you how to set up camp, and concierge can organize fly fishing and mountain biking outings. In Aspen, the 68-room Molly Hotel opened in December with a rooftop pool. From there, it's a 10-minute walk to Aspen Mountain, which expanded its terrain by more than 20% over the winter with 26 new chutes and trails, the majority expert level. Local tip, Sam Degenhard, founder of Campfire Ranch, sends in intermediate to advanced mountain bikers to Dr. Park, northeast of Elmont. It's a Colorado classic with 8 miles of flowy downhill, he says. Afterwards, get green chili tamales at Teocalli Tamale. Next up is Old Fort, North Carolina. Why now? A former manufacturing town on the edge of Pisgah National Forest, Old Fort was down on its luck until the local community started building mountain bike routes. The Gateway Trails were the first to open in 2022, and thanks to a $2.5 million grant, the G5 Trail Collective will construct 42 miles of flowy single track in the next few years, 9 of which are already done. The burgeoning system has boosted the economy. In the past 2 years, 13 businesses have opened, including a number of breweries, the Old Fort Bike Shop, Mountaintop Shuttles, and Gogo's Cinnamon Rolls. And Adventure Intel, my son and I love to hammer downhill laps on the new trails, and there's an easy gravel climb directly out of a trail hub with bathroom facilities. In the backcountry, I like to ride the months-old Bernard Mountain Trail, where a lonely ascent rewards you with 3 miles of side-cut, single track, dropping almost 1,000 feet. I'm also excited about the new 3-mile Lower Heartbreak Trail, which connects with existing routes to form an 11-mile adventure from Blue Ridge Parkway at the base of Mount Mitchell that drops more than 3,400 feet to the edge of Old Fort. And a local tip, Jason McDougald, founder of the G5 Trail Collective, raves about Abitro, the new pizza truck at the Whaley Farm Brewery. It's a real deal, he says, run by a chef from Asheville who imported the pizza oven from Italy. There's always pepperoni on the menu, but go with one of the seasonal pies, like the fall pizza with butternut squash and pine nuts. Next up, the UK. Why now? Whether you go for football on the telly or full English brekkie on the terrace, pubs are an integral part of life in the UK. Yet recent economic pressures have threatened the beloved institutions. In 2022, an average of 32 closed every month. However, the campsite booking company, PitchUp.com, is pairing with country pubs that have scenic grounds where campers can spend the night. Pubs are landmarks in their own right, says PitchUp.com founder Dan Yates, who notes that such reservation searches on the site were up 10% from 2022. Being able to sleep at one offers a truly one-of-a-kind camping experience. For pub owners, campsite fees are a vital new revenue stream, and most guests enjoy the food and drink as well. Venture Intel. Currently, 128 pubs offer a place to either pitch your tent or park your trailer. Type pub campsite into site's destination search bar for listings. Prices average $40 per night and usually include amenities like Wi-Fi and a hot shower. I've got my eye on The Ring, a 19th century stone building on Wales' rugged Anglesey Peninsula, just off the stunning 807-mile Wales Coast Path. And a local tip, at the George in Gloucestershire, walk the nearby 17-mile Jubilee Way and then dig into the banging cavery, as one reviewer put it. The gaggle of geese in the Dorset hamlet of Buckland, Newton, is nestled in an area of outstanding natural beauty. You might spend time on the premises playing with pygmy goats or testing the pins on its Skittles Alley, a lane for bowling, not a pathway lined with candy. That was by Tom Vanderbilt. And next up, Quebec, Canada. Why now? NOAA recently predicted that the current solar cycle, which began in 2019 and will run into 2030, is likely to peak from now until October. What does that mean for those of us who travel to witness the wonders of the night skies? More chances to see a bright aurora borealis. The latitude of northern Quebec's Gyrfalcon Islands falls within the aurora oval, a ring above the geomagnetic poles where more activity happens, making it a good area for sightings, says Sean Dahl of NOAA Space Weather Prediction Center. A native-run expedition that combines sky-gazing with wildlife watching is one of the better ways to make the most of your time in these remote reaches. While two small-town destinations along the St. Lawrence River offer new opportunities to explore the province's under-the-radar outdoor settings. And in the Venture Intel, in 2022, James May and Jonathan Greener, Inuit guides from the small northern Nunavik town of Kujak, started Ungava Polar Eco Tours. In August and September, the best months for the Northern Lights, according to Dahl, they offer a half a dozen seven-day adventures on 6-mile-long Tyrsil Island in the Gyrfalcon Archipelago, just below the Arctic Circle. You'll explore by foot, fat bike, ATV, and boat, the latter which requires experience in this corner of Ungava Bay, where the tidal range could be as much as 63 feet. Sightings of birds and seals are guaranteed. There are also walruses, a variety of whales, minke, humpback, beluga, and orca, wolves, foxes, and polar bears. Guests are housed in insulated fiberglass domes that can withstand bumps by disgruntled beasts and winds up to 155 miles per hour. May and Grenier harvest caribou, muskoxen, arctic char, Canada geese, and berries throughout the year and send their bounty to the renowned Quebec chef Kim Côté, who prepares traditional Inuit meals for guests. If you can't make it to the wilds of northern Quebec, two destinations along the St. Lawrence have ample dark skies, stunning scenery, and attractions with affordable overnight accommodations. Attitude Nordique, a year-round adventure park in Baie-Comeau, has a new zip line and suspension bridge, plus kayaking, climbing, and canoeing, as well as beachfront lodgings and campsites. On the river's southern shore in Saint-Anne-des-Monts, gaze at the heavens from one of the seven Panora seaside pods, each with a hot tub and deck. The property is just 27 miles from Gaspésie National Park, known for its hiking and abundance of moose and caribou. And a local tip, when the aurora borealis, known as Asqqarneet by the Inuit, appears, Grenier recommends whistling. In our culture, they teach us that when you whistle at the lights, they move even more, he says. It brings a joyful mood. That was by Stephanie Pearson. And next we have Australia's Red Centre. Why now? Located smack dab in the middle of the country's outback, the Red Centre is climbing the ranks of many travelers' lists. A flourishing LGBTQ+ festival in Alice Springs is drawing enthusiastic crowds, while visitors interested in indigenous tourism now have easier access to Uluru, the iconic sandstone formation, thanks to direct Virgin Australia flights from Melbourne and Brisbane to Ayers Rock Airport, 20 miles from the site. Adventure Intel, Alice Springs is the final destination of road-tripping drag queens in the 1994 film Priscilla, Queen of the Desert, and each spring the outpost hosts a four-day Fab Alice Festival. This year expects 25% more revelers, upwards of 5,000 people, to celebrate the cult classic's 30th anniversary with performances, a parade, and other gatherings at the new Priscilla Bar at Lassiter's Hotel Casino, featured in the movie. Hikers will head out for a trek at Kings Canyon Rimwalk, which includes Priscilla's Crack Lookout. Uluru, 200 miles southwest, is a different kind of mecca. Aboriginals believe that the distinctive formation was created by their ancestors. To see more of the region, sign up for the Indigenous-operated 100% Finke River Culture and Adventures 5-day cultural immersion tours across Red Centre, which includes treks to the sacred sites and evenings around a campfire eating Aboriginal cuisine. And your local tip, Alice Springs may be remote, but it doesn't lack worldly fare. Stuart Ord, volunteer chair of Fab Alice's board, recommends dining at the Alice Vietnamese restaurant. You can also find Turkish, Chinese, Korean, and Italian eateries in town. And next up, the state of Maine. Why now? The Pine Tree State is on a roll. With an expansion at its largest ski resort, the ongoing renaissance of once down and out mill towns, and the opening of hotels close to outdoor recreation. Did we mention the solar eclipse on April 8th? A swath of Maine will be in the path of totality. Venture Intel. Sugarloaf Mountain has increased its terrain by 10%. Additions include 12 trails, a high-speed quad, and this summer, a lift-served mountain bike park. Saddleback Mountain cut the ribbon on a mid-mountain restaurant with a ski-up bar and views of Rangeley Lake. The resort is also expanding its networks of lift access single track. Portland's new Longfellow Hotel is a mile from the terrific restaurants of the old port, while nearby Biddeford, a revitalized former textile town with its own buzzy dining scene. An 1850s mill is now the 33-room Lincoln Hotel. To the north, in Skowhegan, the Riverfest, held in August, will highlight the ongoing downtown River Park project with an adjustable wave for surfing and paddling. Borrow kayaks and other gears from Skowhegan Outdoors. Way north, Katahdin Woods and Waters National Monument is a certified dark sky sanctuary, and its visitor center is set to open on August 17th. Tells the story of the area through the eyes of the Penobscot and other native tribes. Local tip, Brian Catapang, owner of Mangus on Water Restaurant in Biddeford, says, pick up a cold brew at Time and Tide Coffee on Main Street. It's so good. We use it in our espresso martinis before heading to Fortune's Rocks, the best surf spot around. This is by late Meg Lukens Noonan. And number 23, our last place to visit, is Wyoming's Yellowstone Highway. Why now? Part of the historic Yellowstone Highway is turning 100. The anniversary celebrates my favorite two-lane ribbon of asphalt anywhere in the world, which cuts 300 miles from Shoshone through an especially scenic section of Wind River Canyon before continuing into Yellowstone National Park and then Grand Teton National Park. The trip is all the better this year when you factor in the new planetarium with one of the state's largest telescopes near Yellowstone's south entrance. New park trails and a new zip line and new bike park features at the two ski resorts in Jackson Hole where the highway ends. Venture Intel. Fly into Casper on a one-way ticket and rent a four-wheel drive to return later in Jackson. Then head west 100 miles to Shoshone, the start of the Yellowstone Highway, and drop a line in Boyson Reservoir, teeming with trophy-sized trout and walleye. Continue north to Thermopolis via the 34-mile Wind River Canyon Scenic Byway, flanked by 2,500-foot high rock walls and the Bighorn River that carved them. Hot Springs State Park, which has added an update of 6 miles hiking and biking trails, has a thriving bison herd and a fury bathhouse where you can soak in 104-degree mineral springs. Hit the highway again, and in 3 to 4 hours you can be kayaking across high alpine Yellowstone Lake with naturalist guides at Sure Adventures, or cruise south towards the Tetons for the climbing and hiking around Jackson Hole. It's pricey, but I like to crash at the Cloud Vale right on the town square. The Rusty Parrot Lodge and Spa is aiming to reopen in late May, too. Pro tip, for the best views of the town square or Snow King Mountain, request a room facing Center Street. Last September, I ventured onto Snow King's new zip line with a 36% grade. It's the steepest in North America. In June, the resort will open a $5 million mountaintop planetarium. At Jackson Hole Mountain Resort, while traversing the Via Ferrata, I watched construction workers put the finishing touches on the Grand Teton Skywalk at 10,450 feet. This summer, the resort's bike park will debut a new jump line, co-designated by pro freerider Cam Zink, a prize at the renovated Spur Restaurant and Bar at the base of the mountain. Hikers take note, four-legged friends will finally be allowed on the gondola. Grab a trail map from Chamber of Commerce and check out the awesome trails and the high points overlooking Thermopolis, says Dusty Lewis, owner of the outfitter Rent Adventures. If you're worried about the climbs, they're e-bike friendly. And a spicy blackened burger from One-Eyed Buffalo Brewing always hits the spot. That was by Katie Jackson. And that concludes the 23 best spots to visit this year. And our next article is entitled, Is This the Face of a Guilty Dog? Meet Blowhole, an Alaskan husky who got miffed at a musher and took criminal revenge on her truck. Allegedly. Because a lot of people think this pup was framed. This is by Blair Braverman. If you never heard the legend of Blowhole, I can tell you all about it, because I was there from the start. My husband and I are dog sledders. Wisconsin-based, though we travel, when your life revolves around sled dogs, you're always chasing snow. We met Blowhole in April 2018. I had entered the Kobuk, an unsupported 440-mile race between 7 remote villages in the Alaskan Arctic, and I borrowed dogs from a few friends to fill out my team. One of them was a shaggy black and white 2-year-old owned by Inupiaq musher Ryan Reddington. Like most modern sled dogs, he was an Alaskan husky. Thick-furred, super-athletic mutt, he was named for the vicious and wind tunnels that form on Bering Coast, the ones that threaten to throw you out to sea in, heck, halfway to Siberia, Blowhole. The race started in ice, blowhole pulled hard, muscles rippling under fur, as we crossed the wind-carved surface of Kotzebue Sound. No sooner had we reached land than he stepped into a moose hole, a deep tube-shaped footprint left by the antlered beast. He charged on, but his gait was off. He tweaked a wrist. I unhooked his harness and made him ride with me in the sled. Feels heartless carrying a dog that wants to run, but not as heartless as what I did next, although I acted with a genuine concern. In the village of Selowik, I left Bloho with race volunteers so his wrist could rest and heal. He was given warm food, a straw bed, attention, and massages. I knew we'd see each other again when the race was over, but he was distraught. All he wanted was to keep going. He howled desperately as the other dogs and I continued down the trail without him. Days later, after the race, my husband and I brought Blowhole back to Ryan's place in Kinnick. Immediately after we left, we discovered the brakes on our truck were barely working. We white-knuckled it to a repair shop where a mechanic diagnosed the problem and scrawled it on our $1,200 bill. Brake lines chewed by dog. This is where the legend begins to spiral into something greater than all of us, uniting a sea of strangers with broken equipment looking for meaning and explanations. I posted a jokey tweet about what had happened. Bloho owes us $1,200, I griped next to a photo of his defiant face, ears up and eyes narrow inside his black bandit's mask. That is the least innocent face I've ever seen, someone commented. Others were sympathetic. The only thing he's guilty of is being a good boy. Well-known social media and media accounts started weighing in, including at Darth, the anonymous dog-adorned photoshopper beloved by hundreds of thousands of followers. In capital letters, does this look like the face of a pup who would chew through a truck line brake line and cause $1,200 in damage? I do not believe so. At Darth tweeted on April 24th, followed shortly by Blowhole's face on a wanted poster with the caption, Brake Line Bandit. As word spread, as Blowhole went viral, responses kept pouring in. You can't name a dog Blowhole, then be angry and blows a hole in your brake lines. They had more evidence on Meek Mill. Blowhole is my hero. Soon it seemed that half of Twitter had an opinion about Blowhole and the question of his guilt or innocence. Obviously, I was sure he'd done it. He had the means, teeth. He had the motive, revenge, against yours truly for benching him. I assumed most people would look at the facts and come to the same conclusion. I assumed wrong. Some celebrated his bad behavior. Others said he was framed. Eventually, in the style of ever-changing internet semiotics, he became a symbol of different things to different people. Perpetrator, victim, mystical being associated with weird stuff that went wrong with vehicles, technology, and pretty much everything else all over the world. Damn it, Blowhole, wrote a journalist in Alaska when her debit card, bravely personalized with a photo of the dog himself, was canceled by her bank. Damn it, Blowhole, complained of a woman in Croatia when her toilet flooded the laundry room. Damn it, Blowhole, said a guy in Minneapolis after SpaceX rocket exploded last April. Ryan Reddington won the I Did Run in 2023, sealing his status as a mushing legend. Like me, though, he can never quite escape Blowhole's gravitational pull. When he speaks in front of fans, somebody in the audience often calls out, Free Blowhole! In these ways and many others, the legend grew. Blowhole became a cryptid, child of anarchy and son of rage. Literally, that's his mom's name. Catalyst for rabid discussions about the nature of guilt itself, even as the dog at the heart of the Fuhrer slipped quietly from public view. He never read the memes or saw the fan art created in his honor. He wasn't present for his online trials. He didn't face any juries. His face adorned stickers, notebooks, magnets, bumpers of wheelchairs, and cars he'd never chewed. He wasn't aware that he was presumed to be on the run, that he'd been sighted in South Africa, Germany, in a 15th century Dutch painting. And if he did know, then he never let on. That was Blowhole's power. He didn't let on to any of it. One of Blowhole's most ardent supporters, mild-mannered 34-year-old man from Iowa named Austin Hancock. Offline, he plays a trumpet and helps oversee an assembly line. Online, he's been Blowhole's self-appointed lawyer for the past 5 years, representing his client in mock trials and defending him from slanderous allegations whenever they arise. He posts under the handle at Sasshole on an X account, dubbed the Blowhole Innocence Project, but most Blowhole stands calls him Sass. Needless to say, he loves dogs, and he tends to pop up anytime someone mentions one that has misbehaved, like, say, by tearing open a bag of kibble and spreading it around the kitchen. Innocent, he'll proclaim. Sass and I have never met in person, but we've communicated a lot. Last fall, I called him to discuss the metaphysics of canine guilt. He walked me through a concept of the heart of his worldview, universal basic innocence. I think dogs are dogs, and humans are humans, and our concept of guilt is something we've mapped onto them, and they don't really understand, he said. I guess I'd say that since they don't understand guilt, they are all innocent. In addition to his online efforts to clear Blowhole's name, he spreads his message IRL. Sometimes that just means yelling innocent. Whenever I see or hear something about a dog, he said. It's a grassroots movement, not all that organized. I'd say there's room for growth as an industry. As for his legal training, Sass is modest, since he has none. My expertise is really more constricted to what we refer to as the dog law system. One thing always confused me about the public's defense of Blowhole. I told Sass, people claimed passionately that he hadn't done it, but it seemed to me that if he had chewed our brake line, he might be dang proud of it. In maintaining his innocence, were Blowhole's supporters diminishing his triumph? What's a dog have to do to get credit for eating a truck around here? I offered a hypothetical. Let's say there's a dog named Snowhole. If we knew for a fact that Snowhole ate a brake line, and there were witnesses and then Snowhole pooped out half a brake line, I think that in any situation where a dog eats a brake line, they're still innocent, Sass said. Have you ever tried a brake line yourself, I asked. I have not. Would you consider it? Yeah, sure. If it were delicious, would that change your mind about anything? I think I may have stepped into a bit of trap here, Sass said. Say I feel that I'm universally innocent, I said. Can I be tried in dog court of law for my crimes? I have to say, we haven't had any cases like that. Although he conceded, the dogs, when you talk about their cases with him, they yawn and go back to their sticks. They're not even an ancillary part of this. What we're trying to do is go after humans when we think what they're doing is unfair. And by go after, you mean yelling innocent, Sass confirmed. Blowhole, 8 years old and retired from long-distance racing, after an esteemed Iditarod career, now lives at a tour company called Nature's Kennel in the Upper Peninsula of Michigan. It's a well-run operation where visitors can pet sled dogs, take a dog-powered sled ride, and even drive their own team. The kennel is home to almost 150 huskies, who are divided into much smaller groups, each with its own full-time musher. Blowhole's musher, Elizabeth Coons, is a 21-year-old from Plainview, Minnesota, who's on her fourth year at Nature's Kennel. Blowhole is her favorite. She requests him for her team every season. I drove to Michigan to see Blowhole for the first time since our fateful encounter years before. It was September. Autumn leaves were just starting to peak. Maybe bring him some brake lines to chew, Sass texted. There's a first time for everything. What better peace offering? I stopped at Auto Value of Munson, a boxy store near the gray-blue expanse of Lake Superior. Can I help you? Said the man behind the counter, turning his cap forward. I need a brake line, I told him. What kind of vehicle? He asked. Any kind, I said. It's for a dog to gnaw on. I know, just the one. He led me to a wall and handed me an 8-inch length of braided steel, smaller and thinner than Blowhole's previous quarry. I think it will be tender. When I arrived at Nature's Kennel, it was half hidden within a maze of sandy roads and sparse forests crisscrossed by ATV tracks. I tucked the brake line into my pocket. The kennels was spotless, each building brightly painted with a towering 3-story playground for puppies and a network of playpens connected by bridges and tunnels, all surrounded by ripe blackberry bushes. The tour dogs stretched and snoozed just past the play area. They had already run that morning in the crisp dawn air, and now they were napping in the midday warmth. Elizabeth drove a tractor between rows of doghouses, pushing sand around, then hopped off when she saw me. She was blonde, warm, and energetic. She petted a few dogs as she walked over, then led me to the accused himself, who showed no signs of recalling our storied past. He only had eyes for Elizabeth. He wrapped his front legs around her waist, lifted his chin to gaze at her face. Can you go, ooh, she said. Ooh, Blowhole howled. Yeah, she said, you like to sing. He was just as shaggy as I remembered, just as muscular, but with a fraction of the mania he radiated at age 2. There's an angst in some young huskies. As much as they run and run, it will somehow never be enough. He was chill now, older, mature. If he were a human, he'd have a flip phone, Elizabeth said. He'd talk to every person at a party. He'd be construction work. He'd drink Red Bull. His friends would be like, you should stop drinking those. He'd be like, no, man, it helps me get so much more done. She was training for her first race that winter and planned to pick Blowhole for her team. He was a follower, not a leader. When she tried to put him in front, the lead dog position, he would turn around and come back to sled to see her. But as a team dog, he shone. He was always trying to get the other dogs motivated. Elizabeth knew in a general way that Blowhole was famous, but not why. I try to keep my voice casual. Would you say you notice things breaking around here? Breaking like collars, equipment? Like equipment, near him. She looked around, a hand on Blowhole's back. Not a whole lot, actually. He's the least of my worries when it comes to chewing rope and stuff. Why? I told her the whole story. Gosh, she said, I'm going to keep him away from the truck. I took the brake line from my pocket and asked Elizabeth if I could give it to Blowhole or to chew. I might have slipped it to him secretly, but you don't give anything to someone else's dog without permission. I placed the line on the sand. Blowhole sniffed. Sniffed with interest, if not obvious recognition, and then placed a paw on top of it. We stepped back to give him privacy, and I petted some of the neighboring dogs who'd been waiting for our attention. One of them, Nickel, was smaller, soft as velvet. Elizabeth said he was her youngest, barely out of puppyhood. I was pregnant. He snuffled his lips against my huge belly, hopeful and eager, trying to nurse. It was cute. Then he started nibbling with his teeth. I backed away, feeling guilty for disappointing him. There it was again, guilt. But I hadn't done anything wrong, had I? And stepping back? Anyone would do the same if they didn't want to get gnawed, and maybe anyone would chew a brake line if they were a lone sled dog with 400 miles worth of unburnt energy in need of a tasty distraction. When we came back to Blowhole, he was lying next to the brake line, eyes half closed. He hadn't so much as licked it. I think he spoke with his lawyers before you came, Elizabeth said. Blowhole yawned. I could see where his fans were coming from, shouting innocent. There was certainly nothing punishable in that sleepy face. But if guilt is a human concept, then innocence is too. The dog in question doesn't care. Did Blowhole do it? Only a fool, a human, would try to say for sure. We need our legends as much as he needs to run. And what better explanation for the endless nuisance of broken vehicles and buggy technology than a masked dog exacting justice in the night? After the trip, when I talked to Sass, he embraced ambiguity. I'm concerned that any result of your experiment wouldn't necessarily indicate a clear outcome, he said. Not eating a new brake line at this time. A clever prosecutor might say maybe he had already tried it and didn't like it. Blowhole is, literally and figuratively, a furry Rorschach test. Do you look at his spots and see wild genius, triumph over a machine, purity? Do you see the black dot on his forehead and presume, as his tour guests do, that he's named for a dolphin's breathing spout? Can everything be true at once? Free Blowhole, Elizabeth said as she walked away. Free Blowhole. Ooh, Blowhole sang. When I got back to my car and started, the check engine light came on. This is an article by Blair Braverman, who is an Iditarod finisher, a contributing editor Outside, and the author most recently of the novel Small Game. You have been listening to Sun Sounds of Arizona, and I've been reading from Outside Magazine. My name is Dave Rogowski. Thank you for listening.